Hello, this is a Creative Disturbance podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Condis, for the Indie Games channel. And I'm sitting down here with one half of the Minor Key Games company, Jake Hal Pittman.
Hi, how's it going?
All right. Jake Hal Pittman actually just recently released his new game, Super Win the Game, which was a sequel from You Gotta Win the Game, which I think came out in 2012?
Yeah, that one came out in 2012, back when I was working at Gearbox. I was working on that on the side, and then Super Win the Game just now came out about 3 weeks ago.
Nice, yeah. I've been playing the hell out of it, and it's just still driving me nuts.
Awesome. Yeah.
I guess, you know, it's very much an 8-bit kind of retro-style game, kind of leading almost back to the days of the second Zelda,
right,
the way you at least travel the map.
Yeah, I mean, with the first game, I was kind of trying to make something that felt like the early PC games that I grew up playing, where it's all CGA monitor, monotone PC speaker audio, because that was sort of some of the very first games I ever played, and that was where I learned to program, was on a computer like that. And so with Super Win, I'm wanting to do something that's a throwback to the NES games that I grew up playing too. So yeah, there's a lot of Zelda 2 in there, a little bit of Super Mario Bros. 3, all those sort of touchstones.
There were definitely, like, I think we would call it not pixels, but like the characters. I can't think of the name
sprites.
For them. Sprites, thank you. Like, almost like, I want to say I saw a lot of sprites from different NES games in there, kind of like a homage to some of them.
Yeah, definitely. I was looking at screenshots of, you know, Zelda 2 and Metroid and all of those things, too.
I was going to say Metroid. I almost thought I saw something like...
Yeah, definitely. Down in the caves, there's a lot of, like, the blue stones and, you know, pipes and stuff that you would see in Metroid.
Now, I've been having a lot of fun playing the game, but the thing is, you don't necessarily come from just indie. You didn't start off indie. You started off kind of working in the AAA title scene. You worked for Gearbox.
Right, yeah. I had worked at Gearbox for about 6 or 7 years, and I was doing indie games sort of on the side and just releasing those for free on my website while I was there. And, last summer, it's been a while now. My brother and I, we were both working in AAA games. I was at Gearbox. He was out in California at 2K Marin.
Oh, wow.
And right around the same time, I think we both got the sense that most of the stuff that was really exciting about games was happening in indie space. Mm-hmm. So we both left our jobs and formed Minor Key Games right around the same time. And yeah, that's what we're doing now, is our full-time careers.
Why the name Minor Key Games? Is there any substantial backing with that? Or
we had a lot of trouble coming up with a good name. Minor Key Games was something that we liked because it I think reminded us both of the kind of music that we like to listen to, something that has that, you know, darker edge to it. Of course, I say that, and then I make a game like Super Win, that's super cartoony and happy, at least on the surface.
Well, that almost goes into, like, you know, kind of talking about your brother's game, Elden Ring, wasn't it?
Eldritch came out. Yeah, that was, I guess, last October or November, so about a year ago now. Yeah, that one was sort of like a...
That was a little more darker than I would say your...
Yes, first-person stealth action with, like, a H.P. Lovecraft horror vibe.
I really enjoyed that.
Like a little bit of a cartoony spin on Lovecraft.
So what has been some of the major changes, or not changes, but just differences working from the AAA scene, working in the indie scene? I mean, given the fact now you're your own boss, technically.
Right. I mean, I've sort of tried to, I guess, take as many of the good practices that I learned from Gearbox and incorporate those into my own, you know, solo development as I can. Some of that is just, you know, making sure that when I make changes to a game, I commit discrete changes to my source control repository so that if I do run into bugs, I can narrow down, like, okay, when exactly did this happen? So a lot of it is the sort of production side of things. I think I'm also having to learn a lot about how does video game marketing work, because when I was at Gearbox, I was a programmer, and basically I would have my list of tasks, and would be what I would do.
Somebody else did the marketing for me.
Right. Someone else would have those problems to solve, and now I do have to wear a lot of different hats. So I'm making the game, but I'm also trying to promote the game and sell the game and all that stuff.
I do remember, if I'm not mistaken, like I said, you worked on Borderlands 2, which I think in a lot of places got Game of the Year for 2012. But I remember reading some indie game pages were rating You Gotta Win the Game as sort of like number one indie game. It was almost kind of like you're the top tier on both the AAA title and the indie title. How did that make you feel?
2012 was a really good year. I think it's been interesting watching the reaction to Super Win versus You Have to Win the Game, because it's been much, much slower. And I mean, You Have to Win the Game was free, so yeah, there was no barrier to entry there, and I think that was a lot of the reason why people did like it. So I'm hoping Super Win will pick up, especially like with the holiday season.
Yeah.
Steam always does their awesome sales.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's definitely been interesting to see the difference in reaction there.
What was the kind of creative process, or not creative process, wrong word to use, but like, what was the whole idea behind you got to win the game, then into Super Win the Game? What was the, like, what was the, I mean, a lot of indie game creators say they kind of make the games that they want to play.
Right.
And so what was, like, kind of the backstory of creating the game for you?
So with the first one, with You Have to Win the Game, I had just recently played VVVVV and
great game.
L'Abbé de Mard, which I might be butchering that name, but it's a Locum Leto game,
mm-hmm.
Where you play as a monk traveling through sort of a haunted monastery.
Oh, another great game.
But I had recently played those games and Super Meat Boy and a few like difficult platformers like that, and I really just wanted to make something that was in that vein.
Mm.
And I thought it would be really cool to also take that back to like my origins as a programmer,
mm-hmm.
where I was learning to write code in BASIC on a computer with a CGA monitor. So sort of take that aesthetic and sort of make something that felt like the games that I wish I could have made.
And you keep that nostalgia because when you play the game, whether it's on like through Steam or you download, you got to win the game, you have the monitor-looking sides of it. So it's like a monitor looking into a monitor playing the game.
Right. I mean, for me, that was so much of the appeal of those old games. It wasn't just that, well, it's, you know, CGA graphics and cyan, magenta, white and black. It was also the technology that was being played on, and I wanted to capture as much of that as possible. And then I guess with Super Win, I wanted to do sort of the same thing, but, you know, approach all those classic NES games, because I did get into PC gaming and console gaming right around the same time.
Okay.
When I was a kid, but those were sort of separate things.
You also told me you created all the music for Super Win the Game. I mean, there's, I mean, I've listened to the soundtrack. It's awesome. Maybe, and do you count yourself now as like a, I guess a music, like a MIDI creator when it comes to music, or how is that? What was the kind of creative process behind that?
I mean, I've been playing guitar since
okay.
I was about 15.
So you have a music background, sort of.
A little bit. I mean, it's completely self-taught, but.
But you know, sort of like the music chords and the notes. Okay.
So a lot of the music that I wrote for Super Win was sort of songs that I had maybe written on guitar and had a vocal melody, and I basically turned those into video game music by sort of transcribing either the lead melody or the vocal melody into, you know, square waves and maybe the bass or chords into a triangle,
mm-hmm.
and trying to adapt things to the instruments that the NES was capable of producing. Basically, I wrote my own tools to where I could take a MIDI file and then convert that into my own little proprietary format that then gets synthesized at runtime as you play the game. So
okay.
It's sort of doing audio synthesis to generate, as close as I was able to emulate them, the real
mm-hmm.
sounds of the NES. So I was trying to approach the audio side of things in the same way as I did with the video and the CRT simulation,
mm-hmm.
being as authentic to the real hardware as possible.
Do you think that'll be something you do again for like future games, or you think you might outsource the music this time?
I mean, I really enjoyed that
okay,
process,
good.
So
okay.
I probably would do that again, and I'm thinking, too, my next game will very likely be in the same vein, do something else with the NES aesthetic, because I feel like I spent a while developing that technology for Super Win. It would be a waste to throw it away at this point, so and I really had a lot of fun making it, and just sort of diving into, you know, old magazines and just completely immersing myself in the culture of retro games. That was a lot of fun.
What would you tell somebody who is maybe interested in getting into indie games and kind of like developing, like what were some tips maybe you'd tell them, like what not to do or what maybe they should definitely focus in on?
Yeah, I mean, I got into gaming as a programmer,
mm-hmm.
because back when I was a kid, that was sort of the way to do it. I would recommend probably don't approach everything as like, oh, I have to write all of my own engine code from the ground up. There are so many tools out there now, you know, Game Maker, Unity,
mm-hmm.
Twine for doing text games. There's so many options out there now that you don't need to have a programming background to get into games.
Very true. I mean, like, I think with even Game Maker in itself, it's kind of almost, I hate throwing this out there, but tell me if I'm wrong, but it's almost kind of looking back in the days of Dreamweaver when you're trying to make a website. Sometimes you want to tell it what to do, and it'll program stuff for you.
Right, right. And, I mean, it does have its own scripting language,
mm-hmm.
so you can dive into that stuff deeper if you want to. But, yeah, I think they do a good job of making that stuff really accessible.
Okay. So where do you see the, like, I guess just the game industry going? I mean, do you, like, I know in the last month or so there's been some kind of hate with the gamer community, especially in the indie game scene. I'm not going to go into depth
right.
too much, but it's almost kind of shown, like, you know, even though it doesn't consume the whole gamer community, there's been a few, as I would call, trolls out there that kind of just really made a bad scene, a bad view for that. I mean, where do you think the indie game is just going to grow? Do you think it's going to kind of be stale, or do you think it's going to like fall back? I mean, where do you see the indie games community going?
I mean, I think probably, if anything, the spectrum is going to get broader than it's been. For the last few years, I feel like there's been a distinction between the big AAA games that retail for $60 and indie games, which might be free or cheap. And we're starting to see those lines break down a little bit. You know, there is more of a mid-tier that's developing there, and I don't see that going away necessarily. I think because it's easier to...
Well, how do you mean by mid-tier? Do you mean like maybe like small indie component to like the bigger AAA titles?
Right, or? I mean something that maybe would be released at like $20 to $30 on Steam that has good production values but isn't like a full-fledged $60 game.
Gotcha,
maybe something developed by a smaller team. Yeah, not mid tier and disparaging or talking about the quality.
I wasn't talking about quality, but I mean, like, when I think AAA, you're thinking of like a team of like 200, and then when you think indie, maybe one or four people. And so mid tier, I'm thinking maybe like a smaller subsidiary kind of group.
A smaller team of maybe a few dozen.
Okay.
And I think that there's going to start to be a wider spectrum there of all of these games can coexist.
Okay. And what do you think about, like, I know, like, you know, you have places, like, you've released, you know, your games on Steam now, and Steam seems to be a real prevalent, you know, place to do the indie titles,
but
you have other places like, you know, Xbox Live, their indie market, and you have Nintendo, and you have PlayStation. I mean, do you think that we're going to see a growing in there, or do you think there's going to, like, maybe more restricted?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like with this current generation of consoles, it feels like most of the platform holders really are trying to appeal to the indie games crowd more than they were the last generation. I know personally a number of people who have, you know, who have done development now on PS4 or Vita or 3DS or Wii U, and it feels like that's becoming a little more prevalent than it was previously. So that's really exciting to see.
That's good. And what are your future endeavors? I mean, like, plans for the next upcoming game, or
Definitely. Right now, David is working on Neon Struct, which is another sort of first-person stealth game. It's not a roguelike, so it's not exactly like Eldritch. It's a little bit more of a narrative-based adventure, something closer to like a Thief or Deus Ex.
Okay,
it's set in like a futuristic sort of cyberpunk setting. And I'm working on a game now that's called Gunmetal Arcadia. That's going to be sort of taking the technology that I developed for Super Win, but using that for a roguelike game. So it will have permadeath, it will have randomly generated levels. So, that's sort of what we're planning on doing next.
Very nice. Well, that's about all I've got right now. But, again, if you guys would like to find his game, you can find Super Win the Game. Is it just superwinthegame.com?
Yep, superwinthegame.com, and you can find it on Steam or you can buy it through my website with the Humble Widget.
And if they'd like to find a little more about you, what about, like, where do they find you online?
You can find our company at minorkeygames.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at minorkeygames, or on Facebook. And my personal Twitter is at pirateHearts.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jay. Jay Kalpitman. And this is Kyle Condis for the Indie Games Channel on Creative Disturbance. And I will see you guys all next time.
See ya.